working on this whole thing. And didn't successfully get it on the ballot, but we got thousands of signatures. We just didn't get enough. There was a different problems we had. You were here for decades in Santa Cruz, and you obviously are still interested. What do you make of this?
Well, the city's doing everything to skirt the Boise decision. They were one of the cities that promoted this, taking this lawsuit all the way to the Supreme Court. The Supreme Court said it wasn't going to hear it. So they...
Repeat that, could you?
Stand. The entire thing?
The last sentence.
Because it didn't, the Supreme Court refused to hear it, that meant that the Ninth Circuit Court's ruling stands. And the city and many other cities are trying to skirt the law in however they can or however they think they can. And it's up to the citizens and the homeless advocates to actually sue them and say, listen, you're not following this decision. And, that's going to have to continue.
I got most of that. Our police chief, so to speak, or the police chief, Andy Mills, came from your neck of the woods now, what is now your neck of the woods in Eureka and Arcata, or mostly Eureka, I guess. And he played similar games up there with, as he did kind of down here, saying, he respected the rights of all the homeless people. Boise versus Martin had not yet come out at that point. Instead, you had Bell versus Boise, the predecessor lawsuit, the one that came before that, but that essentially was the same thing. And it looked as though it was going to go the way it did, which was no ticketing for people for sleeping unless you have a place to send them to. And none of these cities, Arcata, Eureka, Santa Cruz, San Francisco, you name it, they don't have those facilities. They don't want to create those facilities. They have these fantasies about a magnet effect and things of that sort. So it's a sort of a, I guess I'm wondering, are Eureka police doing the same thing? Are you aware of anything, what's going on up there?
Well, they passed a stricter camping ordinance just a couple months ago.
Even
they think,
go ahead.
Which they think will, not be challengeable under the Boise decision.
And what's your take on it?
Well, I think it is challengeable because they've basically eliminated, the entire, all residential areas, all the business areas, all the parks, most of the waterfront. There's just very, very narrow places where people can go. And they even eliminate the area that people were allowed to camp in.
What area was that? I missed that last phrase. Go ahead.
Oh, it's like some grassy meadow area on the outskirts of town.
And are they enforcing this restriction? And what impact have you, if you know, is it having on homeless folks' camping habits?
Well, as far as I know, they're giving people tickets. The current COVID, you can't lock unless it's a violent crime. Because they don't want to have a bunch of people in jail and spread the COVID inside the jail.
So what I got from that is, because we are getting a breakup here, is that they are... Try again? Try giving you a second call?
Yeah, maybe we can get a better signal.
All right, I'm going to do that. I'm going to take a musical break, and then I will call you back.
All right, bye.
Thank you, Scott. And we'll do just that.
Once there were some hippies living amongst the trees, picking flowers, smoking joints, hair down to their knees. Then one day they woke up to a nasty chainsaw's roar, and a logging crew was cutting down the public land next door. Now our hippies were not happy with Mother Nature going down, so they called their local congressmen and some bureaucrats in town. But our hippies' words weren't heeded, but they swore they would prevail. So they bought some Stanley hammers and some 60-penny nails. No, they sure don't make hippies like they used to. They used to live in peace, but now they're spiking trees. No, they sure don't make hippies like they used to. No, hippies don't take no shit anymore. When the loggers left that evening, the hippies snuck into the woods, and they figured that 500 spikes should fix that forest good. And they poured sand into the crankcase for to get a dozer sick. They put nails down on the haul road to make their tires leak a bit. No, they sure don't make hippies like they used to. They once were stoned on grass, but now they're kicking ass. No, they sure don't make hippies like they used to. No, hippies don't take no shit anymore. The next day at the work site, the loggers had a big surprise. Their dozer engine seized up, and their tires dropped like flies. And before they could raise a chainsaw, they found this note and cursed. Cause it read, no dice, these trees are spiked, sign love and peace, earth first. No, they sure don't make hippies like they used to. They used to speak of peace, but now they practice what they preach. No, they sure don't make hippies like they used to. No, hippies don't take no shit anymore. No, I'll tell you folks, hippies don't take no shit anymore.
And that was Daryl Cherney's album, well, the song from the album, They Sure Don't Make Hippies Like They Used To. And that's the name of the album, and that's also the name of the song. And we'll be hearing a few more from Daryl Cherney. That's from the late 80s, 1987. Okay, well, we're back with Scott Graham. And I think we actually have an audible recording this time without breaks, hopefully. Scott, I mentioned I saw you on Facebook on around this story, Seabright Speaks Up. Maybe it was, I think it was this story, residents, businesses frustrated by outdoor living ordinance that would allow camping. So even the right-wingers don't like this ordinance either, at least that part of it that says come to the Seabright sidewalks. But you're mentioning the situation down at Highway 1 and Highway 9 where the what I used to call the Homeless Lack of Services Center is. Now it's called funding now? No, housing now is what it's called, right. What are your thoughts?
The first thing they did is they put up a fence around the so that homeless people couldn't get into it. Then they to keep people from gathering on the sidewalk and sleeping there or hanging out there. And, you know, during this time period, it took the homeless word out of it so that they couldn't, they didn't, like, didn't necessarily have to provide homeless services anymore.
They removed the homeless from the homeless services center, or what I call the homeless lack of services center. Unfortunately, we're getting the same problem. Are you at home, or are you on the road somewhere?
No, I'm at home. I have lousy cell service here.
Bummer. Yeah, it's dropping about a half of every third or fourth sentence, so it's kind of difficult to catch. I don't know. I can try to sort of fill in the gaps, but I think the best thing to do is to, we have done pretty good in the past. Maybe it's just a bad day.
It might be. It could be.
Yeah, because you're dropping out. You're dropping out. Let me try. I may try you later, and I'll certainly be trying you again on Sunday to see if I can reach you. And I'll also try to quote some of the stuff you've written online, which I think I can find. I was reading it earlier today, but there's a lot of shit online, so we'll see what I can do. Let's try again another time.
Okay, Robert.
Hey. You too. Sure. We'll talk again. And my apologies, folks. That's kind of crappy reception. I got this idea of getting in touch with Scott even before we have the agenda for the shitty council meeting on Tuesday, because I noticed on the Facebook page for, I guess it was my Facebook page, but Grant Wilson posted a story from the Outlook, which is a sort of a news service, has, I guess, a bunch of Sentinel refugees, Santa Cruz Sentinel refugees, on the making their own paper. It's called Lookout.com, actually, not Outlook. Seabright speaks up, residents, businesses frustrated by outdoor living ordinance would allow camping. And I'm going to try to read a little of this, but the trouble with Outlook or Lookout is that it insists on people who want to read the complete stories paying $187 a year to get these stories, and I'm not willing to do that. So I do sometimes get the complete stories from guests, from people who have gotten that or have some special way of getting into Lookout, or maybe I just get lucky on occasion, but let me see what I can do. So the story in Outlook by Isabella Quito, if I have her name right, hopefully, is headlined, Seabright Speaks Up, Residents' Businesses Frustrated by Outdoor Living Ordinance That Would Allow Camping. And it continues, when the Santa Cruz City Council voted to pass the new law and allow overnight camping by homeless people in part of the iconic Seabright neighborhood, many homeowners and business owners said they had no clue it was coming. Now, this is the same situation that happened 2 years ago when the city council, with a very brief progressive majority, Glover, Crone, Brown, and Cummings, when he was actually part of the progressive majority, which wasn't for very long, had pressed the city council to and required the staff to come up with areas where people could camp. Because they needed to, because there were people, they were camping all over town already, and because there was a court case heading that way. I mentioned it before, Bell versus Boise, that became Martin versus Boise. Actually, I think it might have even reached the point of Martin versus Boise at that point, and it had been ruled by the Ninth Circuit Court that it was not okay to ticket people for camping unless you had some place for them to sleep legally. As an option, you can't just criminalize people for doing things they have to do naturally. And the what the staff did was, instead of looking for and really sizing up reasonable places for people to go, they reduced. Well, they found there were 600 and some odd spaces for people to go to, but they found that only six of these were suitable because they created all kinds of reasons why the rest weren't. And then they reduced it to one spot, the Depot Park area, for a sort of gone by dawn, bring your sleeping bag over, lie down, and get up and leave in the morning in the Depot Park area. And they did this very quickly, which allowed the activists who wanted to defeat any kind of camping ordinance, these are the right-wing Take Back Santa Cruz-style activists, to mobilize and start screaming that the neighborhood had not been consulted, that the people had not been given opportunity to weigh in on this, and so forth and so on. And that's true in a way. In another way, it's also the reality that this has been a need and a situation for years. It's not new, or sure as hell shouldn't be new to people in the community. But on the particular Depot Park, it's true. There hadn't been a particular weigh-in. So Depot Park people flooded into the city council and ranted about the usual hysterical and false and really vicious allegations about the homeless community generally. A bunch of drug users and criminals and vandals and poo-poo and pee-pee, and it's all kinds of crap all over the place, and we can't allow that in our neighborhood. It's the same kind of arguments you hear for stopping halfway houses and other kinds of social services, particularly, though, for people who are camping. This would have been another form of social service, a managed campground, but only available by night. I mean, really, I think it was unrealistic for all kinds of other reasons. And it wouldn't really even be used by homeless people. They would prefer to take their chances with law officers and vigilantes and go to a highly managed situation where they had to roll in and then walk away at dawn and just sort of walk around all day and carry their stuff with them. It's a pretty nasty situation if you've ever been in it. And it's one that's really designed to be cruel to people as a sort of a way of supposedly deterring them from coming to Santa Cruz. All it does is it punishes local Santa Cruzans as well, who happen to live here and, you know, struggle to compete for the very limited social services and shelter services and avoiding the police spots that there are. I guess there are more of those than there are shelter services, that's for sure. And it's not good. So this seems to me, in a way, and of course it was immediately defeated by the city council. They immediately reversed themselves. And it was also used as a campaign issue to throw out council members Glover and Crone, who were sort of painted as the bad guys and the evil poster children of this particular effort, when in fact it was a maneuver by the staff, Martin Bernal's staff, to... it seemed to me, I don't have the paper trail to say, let's get rid of these council members this way, or let's kill any opportunity for homeless people to camp this way. But it was led by Susie O'Hara, who became notorious as a person who, if not an outright liar, which I have called her publicly, is certainly a person who tells tall tales in order to justify abuses and restrictions on homeless people and to fight the court activities that try to restore their rights. She did this before the Coastal Commission. She did this before the federal judge in San Jose in the Ross Camp case. And she's still on board with the city council, telling the same, we've got all kinds of shelters for you, or we will soon have, we predict, we estimate. It's looking very likely that, and this is the kind of language that's used to essentially hornswoggle, and I wouldn't say they hornswoggle people on the city council particularly. I think maybe it's hard to imagine, but I guess Justin Cummings might argue that he'd been hornswoggled now. He hasn't said that to me or anybody else as far as I know, but he was the key vote. He was the tipping vote in the 2019. He could have made the difference, and in fact he did. He joined the Cynthia Matthews minority to crush access to bathrooms, access to shelter, rent control, real rental information, all kinds. I mean, police reform against in order to deal with the abuses that they regularly mete out to homeless people and poor people, and the kind of police policies that really go unexamined because the police department is just completely inaccessible and withholds data from the public as to what it's doing while pretending under the liberal veneer of Andy Mills to be the sweetest and most liberal place that takes a knee with an African-American mayor, you know, with Justin Cummings during the Black Lives Matter protests and the murder of George Floyd by Chauvin up in Minnesota, as you may remember, last year, and it's now in what looks to me like a show trial. That is to say, they're blaming one guy and ignoring all the other cops and the police department that created this whole situation and maintains it. And we have to consider, of course, for us here in Santa Cruz, as I've been barking about for years, what's really happening here with respect to not just minorities, but poor people of all stripes, because it's really more of a class thing, I think, although it's also a racist thing, too, sure. Anyway, here it seems to me with the Seabright situation, the Seabright neighborhood not being informed about the TOLO law, which is a law that says you can camp during the night, but if you have to pick up your stuff and carry it around with you all day. Or, oh, you really don't have to do that. This law won't go into effect until we've got storage facilities. We don't say where, we don't say when, but, you know, it won't really happen until that goes on. But as I've said many, many a time, it is not this law or the old camping law that is at issue. It's the police practice of harassing people outside by whatever ordinance, whether it's blocking the sidewalk or public nuisance or unlawful lodging or you name it, they can, you know, cook up or just move along or else. Lies about shelter situation being available, lies about camping areas being usable and available and having some kind of stability that they can move to. They don't have to tell the truth because they've got the guns, they've got the badges, they've got the legal backing of the city council, and they are just not checked in any way. We once had a police review board that was pretty toothless because its individuals who were on it were appointed by the city council that was determined to keep them toothless because they they were sympathetic with the police department. It's not entirely clear to me why this is, except that I guess there's the class issue there. The city council is mainly elected by people with money connections, or at least elections are determined a lot by financial considerations. Not entirely. You know, it depends. Anyway, more from this article in the Lookout website. When Santa Cruz passed its new ordinance restricting where and when people experiencing homelessness could camp overnight, which it really that really means is eliminating almost all places, and more will still will be eliminated on Tuesday, particularly Seabright, because of this furor about it. Most of the city was placed off limits. What remained accessible for camping are a few areas scattered citywide, including a small industrial zone in the tight-knit and proud residential neighborhood of Seabright. Now, as the ordinance is being tweaked by the city council and awaits final implementation amid COVID-19, word is getting passed around, and many Seabright homeowners and business owners are none too pleased. Now, if you ask activists like Keith McHenry, they will tell you, well, he specifically anyway, will tell you that this is a tool that is being used essentially to motivate and weaponize people on the east side to come out in favor of essentially sort of a bigoted attitude towards homeless people, not just there, but everywhere in the city. Although if you ask them, I'm sure they'd say, well, no, we don't. Aren't we very concerned about the rights of homeless people and their shelter and services, but just not in our neighborhood. It's just not really appropriate here. The small businesses, the story continues, they're just irate right now. They're smoking hot, said Richard Novak, founder of the local skateboard company NHS and owner of the Seabright Cannery Complex on Bronson Street. Novak just learned of the ordinance, set to go into effect by the summer, a week ago. It was announced, it was around the same time that Seabright residents started hearing about the law, imagining their sidewalks full of tents and spreading the word to other neighbors. Discussions proliferated on the neighborhood-based social media platform Nextdoor, a notorious platform that seems to have been cooked up by and largely managed by Denise Elric, So I'm going to interrupt this article I've been reading because I got a call from a local Huffster downtown. Hi, Huffster. How you doing?
I'm doing okay. I just really don't want to be involved. I'm not really a, you know, protester type.
So what did you see that you thought made you want to give a call and let us hear what's going on?
Well, first of all, they've got two volunteers. They actually cordoned off the street from Lincoln to the other side of the parking lot. You know, the church is on Lincoln, the red church, and then there's a parking lot next to it. So, I don't know, something happened in the little shopping plaza that's just, you know, west of that parking lot. That's where they're detaining someone. It looks like a young man, maybe, you know, a brown-skinned man or something, and I couldn't really see his face. I don't know. It just seems like, well, they always do that. They always end up with, like, four armors and, like, 20 million cops or anything that happens downtown.
How many cops did you see, Andrea?
I don't know. I've probably seen at least four. I think there's about three Hummers at least over there. And then when I came back this way, I'm seeing that there's two voluntary police cars that kind of blocked the street off from Cathcart to Lincoln on Cedar.
And how far away from this were you when you were close to it?
Well, I was just down the street over by, like, Maple Street and Cedar when I saw this, and I had to go to the other side of town for a minute, so I thought, okay, I'll just drive past and see what's going on, but I didn't see them frisking the guy or anything. I just saw him sitting there, and, you know, there's all these cops and all these cop cars, and like I said,
did the guy seem to be homeless or homeless looking in terms of how was he dressed, and did he have any a backpack with him, things of this sort?
I really didn't notice that. I mean, he didn't seem bedraggled at all. He kind of had, like, shoulder length hair, but kind of curly shoulder length hair. I was driving, and he was sitting kind of like on a flower bed over there.
Was there a large crowd of people there, or?
It was, like, you know, across the street at the, like, Hawaiian restaurant. It did seem like there was a crowd of young people. I don't know. They were kind of laughing and smiling. I don't really know if they know what was going on or what.
You really didn't get close enough to hear much of the conversation, I take it.
No, I don't really want to be involved. I don't want to be recognized by them, by the cops here, because, you know, and I just don't. No, I just feel like in my position that I cannot afford to, you know, be annoying to the cops or to get into their business, you know, if it's not my business.
Okay, well, listen, I appreciate the call, but I don't think, you know, probably that's as far as we can take it, and because, you know, I understand you're timid about getting involved in these kinds of things, but, of course, that's what other Huffsters are encouraged to do, and that's what I encourage people to do, and I would even encourage you to do. So, but we'll leave it at that, and thank you for the thought of trying to get in touch, and keep your eyes open and your ears open and your camera ready, and maybe next time you'll have more information.
Yeah, well, I just see another Hummer on the way over there. And I just was wondering if you were in town. You know, I know that you would probably walk over, so I just really mostly called to see if you were around.
I gotcha. I'm not. But I appreciate the thought, and, keep your eyes open, and let's apologize.
I just feel like for my own safety.
I understand.
You know, not get involved in
yeah,
this
no,
thing.
Say no more. We're good. We're good. I will talk to you again. Bye bye.
Thank you. Have a good day.
And, yeah, well, there you are. I'm, never terribly happy when people say they're scared to have any kind of citizen witnessing activity. But, you know, I understand that's a reality for a lot of folks. Some people have some very good reasons for it, whether they're physically, psychologically vulnerable, or legally vulnerable for different reasons. Yeah, and some people just somehow feel they can thread their way through the world without without disturbing the police, and as long as they don't offend the authorities, everything will be okay. I don't happen to think that's a very either productive attitude for them or for others, but it's not an uncommon situation. Continuing with the lookout, our Outlook article on the Seabright NIMBYs rising up to just say, no, not even in our limited industrial zone will we allow these wretched people to put down their sleeping bags during the night and their tents during the night, because that just would be wrong. In any case, here's some more of that story, if I can get it together. Discussions proliferated on the neighborhood-based social media platform Nextdoor, and the concern culminated at a 100-plus person community meeting in the parking lot of Day's Market on Seabright Avenue and Watson Street on Sunday, according to organizer Paige Concannon. I think Paige is one of the more notorious right-wing figures in town, particularly on homeless issues. Never had much to do with her. I think I've seen her occasionally at a couple of city council forums, and I think she was involved with, I'm not sure if she, how directly she was involved with, or actually how deeply involved with this phony pseudo-union of the homeless group that came forward and tried to represent itself as being a union of the homeless at city council, when in fact the real union of the homeless, headed by people like Keith McHenry, Alicia Kuhl, with attorney Anthony Prince, who you've heard me give criticism of them, and you'll hear it again, no doubt. But that's this a bogus group that the city council actually gave time and attention to. It's hard to imagine that they weren't really aware that this was a phony union group, but that they gave some air time to and some mic time to. And I don't think they gave them any grants of money, but this was a group that sort of put itself forward as a pro-homeless group, which actually is seems to be exactly the opposite. Anyway, Paige Concannon is described as someone who's lived in Seabright for years and runs a neighborhood watch group. That's rather limited information about her. At that meeting, organizers distributed flyers, Urgent Save Seabright Neighborhood, that described the possibility of unsheltered people migrating from encampments and other parts of the city to the streets of Seabright. So it's okay to have sort of rich profiteers and developers migrate and destroy living space and raise rents and raise prices and essentially destroy the local economy in terms of its ability to sustain the people who've always lived here. But you don't want any homeless people on your streets nearby. I mean, it's pretty nasty stuff, as far as I'm concerned, as I said before. And then we have the horror shows that are raised up. Imagine the homeless scenes of Highway 101, River Street, the San Lorenzo River Walk, and downtown Pacific Avenue Laurel, relocated to the Seabright neighborhood, residential neighborhood, two blocks from Seabright Beach, the harbor, and less than a quarter mile from Galt Elementary, read a flyer taped to the plexiglass sneeze guard at Java Junction Coffee Shop on Tuesday afternoon. Java Junction was a coffee shop that led the hostility against the Ross camp. The city is 16 square miles. Certainly there are areas far more suitable than this presidential neighborhood. It would decimate the area, making it unsafe with accompanying drugs, alcohol abuse, and break-ins and theft. That's a real smear job there. What the ordinance allows for. Under the outdoor living ordinance, residential areas are explicitly off-limits to camping. However, camping is allowed from 1 hour before sunset to 8 a.m. on public property, mostly sidewalks, in the Seabright Industrial Area. Portions of the Seabright Avenue between Hall Street and Marine Parade will have camping-friendly areas, as well as segments of Watson, Bronson, and Hall Streets. A map showing areas in Seabright's industrial zone where overnight camping is allowed, shown in blue, under Santa Cruz's temporary outdoor living ordinance. Many neighbors and businesses have been caught off guard by the provision, which some residents only learned about in the past week. I guess they haven't been paying too much attention to the papers or the people outside. For Concannon, who unsuccessfully ran for Santa Cruz City Council in 2018, allowing unsheltered people to camp close to residential neighborhoods opens the door to increased crime and the formation of nuisance homeless encampments like those the city has dealt with in other parts of town. And it's, this phraseology here is very interesting. Opens the door to increased crime. She doesn't want to state that it actually produces increased crime, but then she'd have to show some stats about that and other parts of town. Let's like say around San Lorenzo Park. If we allow this, we'll just turn into a Camp Ross or a Camp San Lorenzo, and we're getting tired of the whack-a-mole sort of thing, she said. And actually, that's exactly what she's proposing, which is to whack-a-mole. In this case, she wants to whack first and force homeless people to go somewhere else in town, because there really are no other options than to camp in Santa Cruz if you're poor or to sleep in your vehicle. On Tuesday, Santa Cruz reached a compromise in federal court that allows it to move dozens of people from a homeless encampment in San Lorenzo Park to a campsite in the Benchlands floodplain beside the San Lorenzo River. Ah, but only until April 27th, when the court again kind of convenes to find out how the COVID situation is treating the city, and in which case it is, some of us fear it is very likely they are going to remove that injunctive protection for the campers. The city has been trying to deal with the camp and the litter, the crime, and other issues associated with it for months. And actually, that statement is not a statement of fact. That's a statement of the claim by the city, but which the judge found was not sufficiently persuasive to rule to stop the injunction from protecting the campers from the city's determination to move them away. The formation of an opposition group in Seabright is just the latest hurdle for the city's controversial camping ordinance, formerly known as the Temporary Outdoor Living Ordinance. Since a 2018 Ninth Circuit Court of Appeals ruling made blanket camping bans unconstitutional, when there is no other place for a homeless person to sleep and county shelters are almost always full, the city must allow camping somewhere. What started off as an ordinance that prohibited overnight camping in swaths of the city, including downtown parks and beaches, evolved over the course of weeks into a law that leaves few places open to outdoor sleeping. In other words, devolved into almost a total ban citywide, similar to the previous law. Throughout that process, city residents spoke up about how the ordinance would impact their neighborhoods, and more places were struck from the list of permitted camping areas. As I said, that's likely to happen again. Donna Myers has come out in favor of supporting further restrictions. She's the mayor. Once the law goes into effect, it is likely to only include three industrial areas in the far west side, Harvey West area, and Seabright, and each of the primary commercial corridors, Mission, Ocean, Water, and Soquel. But for some, that's on the sidewalk along those corridors. Completely ridiculous. But they're looking for some excuse to tell the courts, see, they have a place to sleep, and therefore if they're sleeping anywhere else, we can have them arrested or roust them. It doesn't solve any problems, it just moves them around, said Novak. But that's exactly, of course, what he wants to do anyway, in my view. Because these people are not proposing any alternatives. Who estimated it would cost him up to $15,000 per month to hire 24-hour security to guard the Seabright Cannery property. Has there been a need to guard anything near San Lorenzo Park? I haven't heard about it, if that's true. Novak is dubious that any of the rules Santa Cruz City Council okay to make camping more tidy and less visible will be enforced, so he expects to bear the brunt of it as a business owner. Homeless advocates and service providers have similarly criticized the city for crafting a law that offers few proactive steps toward addressing the homelessness crisis. This is true. In Santa Cruz, there are estimated to be hundreds of people sleeping on the streets every night. In response to these critiques, city council members added into the law the creation of a highly managed safe sleeping program that could serve 150 people or more. The city's hope is that by requiring unsheltered people to pack up their belongings every day, it can reduce the likelihood of entrenched encampments. Of course, I don't know, exhaustion, heart attacks, illness, ailments, spreading of things like COVID-19 isn't likely to be reduced by this kind of thing. But, I mean, after all, we will reduce entrenched encampments. Pretty interesting kind of calculus going on here. Taking root in public spaces and disturbing nearby residents. I think rather it might be better to hire some psychologists or psychiatrists or maybe, I don't know, massage therapists to help these disturbed nearby residents. But Seabright area critics are still bracing for impact. Smaller businesses in the area that are recovering from the pandemic, such as Pacific Edge Rock Climbing Gym and Verve Coffee, will be hurt by having to deal with cleanup and safety issues associated with homelessness, Novak said. For some local patrons of those businesses, the idea of navigating around unsheltered people living on the sidewalks is uncomfortable. But perhaps not quite as uncomfortable as sleeping on the sidewalk itself. I know, you can always go home to your bed and contemplate that one, I suppose, Mr. Novak. Let's see what else we have here. We're kind of a walking neighborhood, and there's some industrial zone right down here, but that industrial zone is between us and all those things we want to enjoy, said John Teeple, who lives with his family about two blocks from the industrial area. I'm not saying I have a solution. I just don't give a shit. I'm sorry, I just added that. All I'm saying is that what you're proposing, you're just shifting the problem and you're just redistributing it and you're not really solving anything. For the campers themselves, it's going to be super disruptive. For us, it's going to be very, very disruptive, Teeple said. I mean, you know, I suppose that there's a certain level of disruption by having to look out your window and see a homeless person on the sidewalk. Perhaps not quite as disruptive of as having people start hassling you for being on the sidewalk trying to get a sleep at night and calling you a child molester, a drug user, an alcoholic, or a criminal. But it's true. It's a real problem to have those homeless people invisible in your sight outside the window. I mean, I hope you catch my sarcasm. It's going to create more pressure on the problem. City hearing, much feedback. Many community members have written to the city council and other city officials in recent days. City spokesperson Elizabeth Smith said via email, all the comments are being taken into consideration, she said. Negative impacts on businesses and residents in any area of the city are of great concern to the council members and staff, particularly given the effects of COVID-19 on our local businesses. Evaluation of the ordinance is a condition of its implementation, and the city will be monitoring the positive and negative impacts of the ordinance once it goes into effect, Smith wrote in a statement. Or, in other words, blah, 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 blah. But actually, I'm sure that the result of this will be they will remove the Seabright area from the the growing, or add it to the growing areas that's everywhere it's banned to be. Should issues that threaten health, safety, or access arise relating to camping, or if the sidewalks are being blocked during daytime hours, residents and businesses are encouraged to notify the Santa Cruz Police Department for prompt enforcement. Although the outdoor living ordinance was given final approval earlier this month, the City Council will consider a full slate of amendments on April 13th, which is what I was saying before, that must be approved before the law can be enforced. During that meeting, city officials could vote to make further changes to the law, which would then return to the City Council for final approval for a future meeting, likely on April 27th. Due to the COVID-19 crisis, parts of the ordinance, including a prohibition on daytime camping, will not be enforced until either the Santa Cruz County enters the yellow tier or the U.S. Center for Disease Control and Prevention changes its guidelines related to homelessness. On Tuesday, the county moved into the orange tier, which is more restrictive than yellow, but just one tier away, I might add. And before we go any further, let's take another musical break, and then we'll get back to some of the Facebook discussion of this Well, I'd say it's what I call it. I would call it a slanted story, I guess. Yeah, I guess I would. I'd call it a slanted story because it doesn't mention some of the most obvious things, like there are no. The obvious questions are asked, well, are you then saying you want to drive them out of all neighborhoods if somebody feels the same way you do in these other neighborhoods? Or do you have any actual solutions? And, of course, people have no solutions, at least the ones who are quoted. And I've found that to be the case generally with people who are opposing this. They don't have solutions, but they like to complain about not being consulted. They like to complain about all the possible criminal concerns it may raise without having any statistics about real criminal concerns in other places. Just the kind of stuff that was used to attack blacks and Hispanics and minority groups of all kinds elsewhere in the past.
When I was a young boy in the Sierra Club, I prayed to the Freds and the good Lord above. I asked them for a wilderness and some old-growth trees. I quoted the facts and I always said, please. Yeah. But after a few years it dawned upon me, when they built them damn roads and they cut all the trees, that I was a fool, too blind to see. Now I'm a tree spiker, have pity on me. I've been a tree spiker for many a year. I spend all my money on tree spikes and beer. I go down to the valley where the tall timber grows. How many I've gotten, well, nobody knows.
Spike, 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 spike.
I spike me some redwood and I spike me some pines. And they've tried to stop me with rewards and fines. The cops and the Freddies are hot on my trail. But I'm a tree spiker and I'll never get nailed. Now I've been a tree spiker for many a year. I spend all my money on tree spikes and beer. I go down to the valley where the tall timber grows. How many I've gotten, well, nobody knows.
Spike, spike.
Join in, everybody,
spike,
and follow the bounce of spike.
I've been a tree spiker for many a year. I spend all my money on tree spikes and beer. I go down to the valley where the tall timber grows.
How many I've gotten, well, nobody knows.
So here is Tim Goncharov on Facebook commenting on the article that I read you. This is tragic. Oh, by the way, I should tell you what that song was. Sorry about that, folks. That's from the, again, they sure don't make hippies like they used to, a Daryl Cherney album. And the name of the song is The Ballad of the Lonesome Tree Spiker. It's by Mike Rozelle and Daryl Cherney. Anyway, Tom Goncharov, again, commenting on the proposed furor around the idea of the scandal of letting people sleep on the sidewalks or in the industrial areas of Seabright. This is tragic, but it was totally predictable, he writes. Any neighborhood the city designates for camping is going to scream, and the city is going to cave. They always do. But this was never meant to be a real solution. It was just meant to look enough like one to satisfy the courts. Now that it's collapsing, maybe we can talk about real solutions. And Renee Belleville Flower writes, the response from the Seabrook neighborhood should have been expected given the absurdity of the map that is currently posted on the city's website. And then she describes in detail this map. how the camping zone would be short sections of sidewalk in between driveways at U-Save, Liquors, Burger King, and Safeway. There are no sanitation facilities in this area, and the sidewalk is narrow. If people were sleeping on the sidewalks at this intersection, pedestrians would be pushed into traffic. The highlighted area actually extends across the driveways of private residences. I know this area. It's close to my house, and I've walked there a lot. It is not an appropriate area for camping. Of course, so far, old Renee has not given us any areas that are appropriate for camping that she wishes to suggest. At the Bay School sidewalks next to Berger, Sylvan Music, and Bayview Elementary School, an okay place to camp? There are no public sanitation facilities. Pedestrians use the sidewalk. And again, she, I guess she sort of is reiterating her argument for another part of the Seabright area. And Tim Gonsharoff writes, the obvious question is, if not there, as I was saying, as he is saying too, where? No place is not an option. Far from me and somewhere else are not answers. Where? And I guess Renee writes, okay, I have the same question. Where? Do you have an answer? I don't have an answer. Well, if you don't have an answer, then you don't criticize where people have to sleep. That's the point. The city would need a lot of land and a lot of money to develop an appropriate and large facility for multiple facilities to address very complex human, social, economic, and health issues. This is the same it's-too-complex bullshit that you'll get when, in fact, what's really needed are places where people can survive, at least temporarily, while the cities like to sit around and spend their money on large grants to developers and babble about this issue. It's a way of evading, of saying, not in my backyard and not in anybody else's because it's too complex. We'll wait till we're all, you know, in a wealthier situation. In the meantime, people will be continue to be placed in jail, arrested, harassed, and also be a public health hazard, too, because this creates a public health hazard all over the place. The city published a map that highlighted and identified permitted camping zones. Part of the problem, Renee writes, is that those permitted zones that are identified on the map are not appropriate for camping. And then she goes on discussing more. She does suggest the city's River Street parking structure. We suggested that 30 years ago, actually. And we're told that it couldn't be done, according to Police Chief, then Police Chief Steve Belcher, because it didn't have a sprinkler system. Of course, what it really meant was we don't want those homeless folks in our town was the kind of the really the subtext, I believe, to Belcher's comment. And Gonsharoff says, referring to the River Street structure possibility, perhaps a permanent site would certainly be preferable to constantly shifting them from place to place. Until one is found, the courts have ordered the city to leave them alone. Instead of tying themselves in knots, trying to scam the courts with fake solutions, maybe they should take this to heart. And Grant Wilson says, good points. And there's more. But, well, here's a little more. Patrick Boyle writes, certainly the response from the people in Seabright cannot be a surprise. For the city to write an ordinance that outlines places like the sidewalk in parts of Seabright or the sidewalk in front of the Circle's Market is complete insanity. As a complete aside from the embarrassment of the sites offered as camping areas is the profound inhumanity in legislating that people have to get up and move the entirety of their belongings every 8.5 hours. This is not simply a City of Santa Cruz problem. Santa Cruz County and the state of California are the major actors empowered to do something about the condition, not the city. Except the county does not tend to go after, impose the same kind of severe restrictions on sleeping outside that the city does. However, the lack of leadership in the City of Santa Cruz has allowed the state and the county just look the other way, to take funding for this problem and then refuse to act. The rest of the county has to step up and help out with this problem. This is, of course, the line of Donna Myers and all the other conservatives on the city council. We don't have to do anything until the county does. The rest of the county has to step up. It's the most egregious NIMBY response for them. See, we're not NIMBYs, but they are. To continually shirk their responsibility. Call your county supervisors. Call all of your... And so call Gavin Newsom. Call Jimmy Panetta. We need a long-term place for these people without homes to be able to live. In the meantime, get the fuck out of our town. That's not what she says, but that's the subtext, I'm afraid. And I'm surprised that Grant Wilson, my old colleague, another fellow Santa Cruz 11 member from the days when we were engaged in the Occupy struggle. You are absolutely right, Patrice Boyle. So tragic and infuriating. I wish for a day that those in power would trade places from those without power and feel what it's like to live on the margins, the edge of a freeway or the sidewalk of a busy boulevard, or push a shopping cart of all worldly belongings, try to get food, a shower, use a public restroom, then start back at the same old humdrum the next day. I think any perceptive, honest person will be profoundly transformed by that experience. But unfortunately, not people in power. That's not how it works, generally speaking. Almost invariably the case. What is Ryan Coonerty's view? I'm reluctant to even begin reading this, but here's an excerpt from County Supervisor Ryan Coonerty's most recent emailed newsletter. Homelessness. There's a lot of conversation and frustration locally about the state of homelessness in our community, deservedly so. While the issue is an emotional one, it is important to be grounded in facts. Here are some to help understand the situation. The county is providing the city of Santa Cruz hundreds of beds, including at the Armory, both inside and out, in six motels, the Vets Hall, and through a safe parking program in multiple lots. This is only, of course, after the state has, and the feds have provided large amounts of money around COVID, and is probably likely to end soon. The River Street Shelter is closing in May, or I could say the end of May or the beginning of May. The Armory is shutting down. The Vets Hall is being emptied. People are going to be driven back into the bushes or into the downtown area. That's, you know, or wherever they choose to go is what's likely to be coming up. We are housing twice as many people as we were at this time last year. But of course, again, there's no mention that this is about to end. That's the basic lie that Coonerty conceals in this story. And Coonerty, of course, was the on the Santa Cruz City Council for quite a while. And he criminalized homeless people in new ways, such as making it illegal to sleep in your vehicle inside a parking lot, even during the day. Even if you had a baby with you, even if you couldn't even sit there and wait while you were awake. It became a crime to be there for more than 15 minutes in any of the city's parking garages or parking lots, thanks to Ryan Coonerty. He can take credit for that. He initially said that was his concern because his employees were nervous that there were people lurking in the parking structures. And, of course, people go into parking structures who are homeless to get shelter, and they did. That no crime stats were ever presented showing a significant problem with assaults or rapes in those structures that would indicate there needed to be some complete criminalization, which his city council passed, and every city council since then has continued to allow to exist, to criminalize people in the parking lots and the parking garages. Those are the city-owned parking lots and garages that are paid for with taxpayer money. And I remind you that people who are homeless also pay taxes when they purchase around here, which they do. The county has hired Dr. Robert Ratner, Coonerty continues, to coordinate homelessness response at the county. He is an MD and has many years of experience in Alameda County and in the nonprofit community. He proposed, and the Board of Supervisors unanimously adopted, his three-year action plan. So they got a nice action plan. For too long, the city has borne too much of the burden providing services and housing for the unhoused in our community. Just last month, Supervisor Koenig and I spearheaded an effort to site more housing and services in the unincorporated parts of the county. I'm not quite sure specifically what he's talking about. Perhaps he can get a little more particular. There is no secret pot of money or sites for shelters. Oh, yeah? There was a lot of money that came in. And people are wondering where it went. That was an issue at today's Huff meeting. Where has the money gone? And perhaps we'll be looking into that. Any site will be in someone's neighborhood. I do not and have never supported unmanaged encampments in neighborhoods. He's never supported managed encampments either, Coonerty, as far as I know. Or commercial areas. Based on best practices, Dr. Ratner does not either. And the best practice is to let people camp where they need to, far away from services from each other. I mean, and then have them arrested for doing that or harassed and moved from place to place, even as they're disabled. This is a combination of ignorance and bigotry, or some strange mixture of the two. I'm in constant contact with the mayor and council members about this crisis. But have you done anything about it in the last year in terms of what's coming up or what was happening before you got some money on COVID-19? City and county staff are also working more closely than ever and meet regularly. Even with all these efforts, the situation on the ground is worse than ever. The strategic framework and six-month plan adopted by the board and vetted through each city and our nonprofit partners is an important first step to achieve long-term goals to reduce the number of unhoused in the Santa Cruz County. If you're falling asleep, I don't blame you, because I am too. However, the reality is the plan will need more resources in the future. The crisis of the unhoused should be addressed in the same manner our nation is tackling the pandemic, with a massive mobilization of federal and state resources to provide housing, treatment, and jobs for the unhoused who are out of work. Of course, you have, what, how many millions of dollars have been dumped into this here, and where did it go? It went for administration, for buildings, for staff, and I'm just not too clear on how much it would actually reach the homeless. Institutionalized outdoor living and turning over our parks, sidewalks, and open space to unmanaged, unmitigated camping is not the answer. His answer is somehow, somewhere down the road, somebody else supplying money, and he's got a great plan when and if that ever happens. That doesn't sound like anything at all, actually. Let's listen to a little more music, shall we? I'm a little tired of listening to myself.
Extinction's door.
kitchen door. Knock, knock, knocking on Extinction door. You know we're knocking now. Knock, knock, knocking on Extinction door. Can you hear me? Knock, knock, knocking on Extinction door.
And that was another from They Sure Don't Make Hippies Like They Used To, Daryl Cherney, Knockin' on Extinction's Door. So earlier this week, I visited Berkeley, as I mentioned before, to pick up Street Spirits and The Street Sheet, both of which, by the way, are online, in case you have trouble finding me. I'm here and there. I occasionally can be found at Food Not Bombs, but the Union of the Homeless meeting is a place I've occasionally visited. That happens every Monday at 2 o'clock at the Food Not Bombs meal area. That's at Front and Laurel. Or, of course, on Thursdays, where I was today, at the Homeless United for Friendship and Freedom meeting. That happens from 11 to 1 at the Sub Rosa Cafe, which is right next to the Bike Church at 703 Pacific at the Sub Rosa Courtyard. You can also give me a call at 423-4833. I'm able to find some way to get you some papers, particularly if you're a poor person who's selling them and needs that kind of funding to get in and out of the cold. That's really what the papers are for in the main. But you can also find them online at the websites The Street Spirit and also Street Sheet. They're located, but still what they have to say, if you're interested in homeless issues, applies here too. Although we need a local publication, so if anybody gets interested in writing, just let me know. I'd like to hear about it. So if you've been following this show, you'll know that the People's Park has been an issue I've been concerned about and had interviews with activists like Carol Denny and others in the park. And this week was another round of the same. When I was up there getting the papers, I ran into a couple of folks in the park and checked them out, got their stories, and here's what I got.
So it's a sunny day. It's about 10 after 4 on April 6th. Local. It's news from Santa Cruz. Here you go.
Of course. Thank you.
You're welcome. Would you like one too, or shall we just pass one around? What do you think? You get your own special copy. Can you report some of what's happening here for the folks in Santa Cruz? I'm doing sort of a audio thing on.
Oh.
Nothing special, but you know.
Yeah. You mean like what people's plans are or what?
Well, not necessarily, but you know how things are going up here. The cops hassling people or leaving you alone. What's cooking with that? We're talking with first names only.
Oh, my name's June.
I'm Robert June.
Nice to meet you.
Go for it.
Yeah, it's been pretty quiet like the last few weeks. Yeah, we definitely like have concerns, especially with shelter in place coming to an end. But we haven't like had any issues so far.
Is the population growing, staying stable, or shrinking?
I would say it's pretty stable now. Yeah.
And I notice, are many housed folks living here?
There's some people staying, but a lot of people who stay out here are not housed.
I would imagine.
Yeah.
But I'm wondering, are people who are housed monitoring, so if there's a call for some kind of, you know, if the university suddenly decides to bulldoze everything tomorrow, Is there? I mean, are people here on the scene? Would they be advising the community of all this?
Yeah, we have like networks in place to get word out if we need to.
If people want to know about what's going on, is there an online site they should go to get more news?
You can go to our Instagram at People's Park Berkeley, or our link tree is linktr.ee/People's Park, and that's where like most of our info is at.
And how long have you been involved?
I've been involved for like 2 months now.
Have you learned anything?
I mean, I've learned a lot. I guess the main thing I've learned is like the strength of the community, and being able to work with like the strength you get from working with other people.
And when I was here last, there was a fence up and the police were here, but the folks took down the fence when I was here, or they opened it up actually. It's been on fence since then, right?
Yeah, there was like, they put up another fence for a short period, but then that one came down too.
Shocking.
Yeah.
So I'm counting 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10. What, 30 tenths or so, something like that?
Yeah, maybe something like that. I don't know. It comes and goes a little bit, but yeah.
And Food Not Bomb serves regularly, I understand.
Yeah. Lately, they've been coming every day, pretty much. Yeah.
And what are the principal needs of folks here? If I don't know if anybody in Santa Cruz gives a shit, but maybe they do. We'll see.
I mean, there's definitely like a wide range of different needs, and like it depends on how people use the park. People who are like staying here in tents and stuff, a lot of them need housing and need access to like affordable housing, or access to jobs, or yeah, just like stable living situations.
What immediate, you know, like bread and butter needs in the park right now?
So there's actually like a decent network of mutual aid already like in existence before we got here that provides a lot of like food and like basic resources to people living here. Of course, like they always need more and could use more of all of that stuff. And that's something that we're like helping with too. But yeah, like there are networks that help people get a lot of those basic needs met.
Are other parks also the site of encampments, or is People's Park unique in that regard?
In Berkeley, I think it's unique. I don't think there are like other encampments in areas that take up like this much space, but I can't really say for sure.
Is the liberal mayor, Jesse Arguin, famed for his tolerance and love, letting people in the parks alone at the very least, or perhaps providing assistance?
Definitely not providing assistance. but yeah, we haven't heard much from the mayor.
No word from the Fuhrer?
Yeah. Not yet.
Anything you want to add to any of that? Have you heard any of this stuff we've been talking about?
Yeah, a little bit.
What are your thoughts, if any? Thank you, by the way. You've been talking with
June.
Thank you, June.
Yeah, you should definitely talk to me.
Yeah, what's your name?
Amy.
I'm Robert. So, having heard this sort of exchange, any thoughts?
Yeah, I mean, I think that, like, most of what he was saying, they were saying is, you know, accurate. Yeah, and that's sort of, like, my first thought, you know.
All right. How long have you been, I don't know, you're a supporter of the park.
Yeah.
How long have you been involved in that?
Oh, I've been involved in that for a few years now, like maybe like 2 or 3 years, maybe more, honestly, I don't know.
And how has the situation changed compared with when you first got involved?
Well, when I first got involved, there weren't tents in the park.
It was actually illegal to sleep in the park, right?
It was, yeah, and it was illegal to sleep in the park, but people were still sleeping in the park. Like, it was still, like, a necessity. People would sleep on mattresses and stuff, and, like, you know, I mean, the cops would come around and harass people every once in a while, but they don't have anywhere else to go, so.
And when did the tents begin to show up?
So, I mean, I was setting up my tent, like, I was one of the first people to set up a tent here. Because I got, like, I was evicted and, like, anyways, I became homeless, but, like,
You're in Berkeley.
Yeah, in Berkeley. And basically, like, you know, I mean, the cops constantly harassed me. Like, I was, there's more than a few times that they took me to Santa Rita for, like, sleeping in the park. But, like, at the end of the day, they don't really have anything that they can, like, press charges about because, like, you're literally just seeking shelter. But
during COVID or before?
This was long before COVID, like, when I became homeless and, like...
What year was it?
I have, like, I can show, I have pictures, which is the easiest way for me to look up the year, because I have pictures of my tent back then. If you don't mind, or are you in, like, a rush or something?
Well, I got someone waiting and I'm illegally parked, but other than that, I'm good.
Okay.
Looking this up on your phone.
Yeah. Oh, here we go. Yeah, 2019 was when I started, like, really, like, staying in the park, like, living in the park. I was, like, you know, that was, like, when I first set up, like, a stable tent, like, in one spot. Like, previously, I just had, like, a pop-up tent that I'd set up in the park at night because, you know, just to, and, like, I'd just take it down during the day. But, yeah, in 2019, I started, like, living here. Like, you know, I had, like, a mattress and, like, food and stuff. Like,
where did you set up?
I actually set up, like, right under that that tree over there.
And it's near the, that's near Dwight Way and whatever this cross street is.
Yeah.
And you said you were pretty much one of the first. Were you alone or were there, you have companions?
I didn't have a companion staying with me in the tent, but there were, like, at some point there, like, because there are other people who are sleeping there, right? And, like, after, like, a certain amount of nights when I was there, like, and the cops were just kind of, like, not, you know, leaving me alone because, you know, there's nothing that they can actually press charges about at the end of the day. Like, they can harass me. But, like, so they started setting up tents, too. And, like...
Is this because of the Martin versus Boise decision?
I think so. I'm not really, like, up to speed on, like, you know, the law or something. I'm just, you know... I've just experienced the law, right?
The lash of the law.
Yeah.
Or the lick of the law, depending on how you look at it.
Yeah. So yeah, like after like a certain period, like people did start setting up tents, and like you know, they would be there for like well, there was like a sizable encampment. Here, like in this area, not over there, like that.
By the corner of Haystand, what is this, Bowditch? I think it is.
Yeah, like this area, all throughout, like all this section that has trees right here. Basically.
This corner, the.
Yeah, this corner of the park. So there was like a sizable encampment, and then actually.
After trees began coming down, or before?
This was a while after. There was actually like a protest encampment that came up, which was like when they were cutting down trees that I was actually a part of as well.
You remember what year? I think I may have come up for that, but I don't.
Oh yeah, I can look up the year because I have pictures from it.
Okay.
Oh yeah, here we go. It was early 2019, I think. Like late 2018, early 2019.
Are any of these pictures posted online anywhere on a website? People can find your, you know, how you, the history of the park at that time?
No, these are, I haven't, like, given these to the public. These are just, like, my personal
gotcha.
Pictures. I don't know, I had this thing where, like, every time I left my tent, like, I was just taking a picture of it, because...
You want some evidence that it was there?
Yeah, like that type of thing. Like,
proof,
you know,
of your own existence.
Yeah, like when the cops fucking robbed me of everything, I was like, see, I was right there. Like, you know.
How many times has this happened to you?
That the cops have, like,
taken... I'd say in the last 2 or 3 years.
Well, there was this one big time that, like, you know, which is, like, the main part, like, when it happened, like, you know, so there's starting to become, like, a sizable encampment, and then, like, there was apparently, like, a big police raid, and they evicted everyone. They told them, like, you know, you can't be here. I was actually in the restroom during the time, and so I couldn't, like, and I was actually... arrested in the restroom. Funnily,
arrested in the restroom, or?
That's correct.
Wow. They must have been, eager to get you.
They were eager to get me. And so yeah, so they took all my stuff, like all of my stuff, like I had my food, like all my clothes, like. And I still haven't gotten, like that stuff back. I still haven't gotten, like, the suitcase with all my clothes in it and, like, you know, the tents and, like...
This was a couple of years ago.
Yeah, this was in 2019, or I think so. So, basically, what most of the other people who are staying here did, they just moved their tents onto that sidewalk up there.
The other side of Bowditch.
Yeah, and, At a certain point, like, because I got, like, immediately after that, I got, like, a pop-up tent, and, like, you know, I set up the pop-up tent in the park, and, like, you know, if they told me to take it down, I'd take it down type thing, but, like,
Did that happen frequently?
You know, the cops come around on, like... a regular basis, like, I mean, like, there's periods where the cops are just kind of, like, they're really trying to, like, fuck with people, and then there's times when it kind of, there's periods when it kind of calms down, and they just kind of, like, leave things alone, but, yeah, I mean, like, I set up a pop-up tent, eventually I set up, like, a full-fledged tent here again, and, like, other people started moving down as well, like, slowly but surely. And, like, you know, I mean, the encampment pretty much regenerated. It just kind of, like, moved out of the way when the police told them to move out of the way.
What's the status of the encampment now, in your view? Is it expanding, contracting, stable?
I mean, it's expanded greatly. Like, you know, this middle section and the back section, like, had tents, like, when that initial raid happened. So
what about in the last 2 months?
In the last 2 months.
Are we getting bigger here?
Small? In the last 2 months, there's definitely, like, more people coming around. I think so, yeah.
How's the inter-tent situation? Is there much comradeship? Is there much rivalry? Is there much crime? What's the story?
There's different groups. Mostly get along, like, you know, well enough, but sometimes there's sort of, like, you know, arguments or disputes or what have you, but, like, and there's also, like, individuals who just have, like, you know, trauma and, like, you know, unstable mental conditions, and, like, them interacting with other people just kind of, like, who also have that, you know, that same thing going on, like, sets up, like, a chain reaction, and, like, because nobody wants to call the cops, right? They kind of, like, have to deal with conflicts on their own, and, like, they don't always have the capacity because of, like, all kinds of trauma and, like, you know, possibly, like, mental disabilities, that type of thing, substance abuse history as well.
Anything coming up that people should know about as far as events that are happening here?
There is, I think there's, like, a protest that's going to be taking place, like, on Bloody Thursday or Tuesday? I forget one of those. Like, it's this historic date for the park.
In May of 1969, probably.
Yeah.
Two people were shot, one of them to death, and
right.
One of them blinded.
Right, yeah. So there's going to be, that's, like, the main thing I know about, like, and every Friday they, They do like a movie. They've been doing like movie nights and like like bringing cooking food on site and stuff and like distributing it and that type of thing, like cooking dinner, I guess, basically. So
we've been talking with again
Amy.
General said, you're young, I guess you don't understand. We gotta have these things in case it gets out of hand. I said, what if they're just like you? Always got to be on top. Isn't there some place to end this? Isn't there some place to stop? What if everyone thought like you? The general said to me. Young, I guess you don't comprehend. The people walking the streets, they gotta have their money to spend. And how can there be any money if we don't sell the things that we build? And I said, why don't you build something else to use without having to kill? What if everyone thought like you? The broker said to me. You're young, I guess you don't see the light. The hype they feed us in the morning must go out to the people at night. The people, they like a good show. How can you deny them their due? And I said, what does that say about us? And what does that say about you? What if everyone thought like you? The newsman said to me. Everyone but like you, the newsman said to me. I said there would be some peace, there just might be some peace. Oh, there just might be some peace, there just might be some peace. Oh, there just might be some peace, there just might be some peace. Stop the war, stop the war, stop the war within yourself. The war. Stop the war. Stop the war within yourself. Oh, and you won't have to fight with someone else. No, you just won't have to fight. You won't have to fight with someone else. No, you just won't have to fight. You won't have to fight with someone else. Stop the war, stop the war within yourself.
And yet another from They Sure Don't Make Hippies, like they used to, Stop the War. And now we go back to last Sunday when I was out on Pacific Avenue with a couple of other Huff activists doing some tent tabling, I guess we'll call it, where we've done this the last couple of weeks trying to alert the community to the absurdity and the cruelty and the costly consequence of the so-called Tolo Law. I call it the Toto Law. I don't mean after the dog and wizard. I mean temporary outside dying ordinance is what I've dubbed it. And as mentioned in past shows, what we've been doing, and we'll do it again on Sunday, feel free to join us at 2 o'clock on Sunday. That's where we'll be down there, in front of New Leaf Market on Pacific Avenue and Soquel, setting up a tent, giving out literature, haranguing the community, picking up signatures and supporters, and talking sanity to a rather oblivious and insane scene. Not so much that the downtown Pacific Avenue scene is insane, but oblivious perhaps, but not terribly insane. But I'd say the shitty council is pretty darn crazy about this stuff. But check it out, 2 o'clock on Sunday, and this is what happened last Sunday. These are some of the interviews.
Whole situation would be really helpful to the current.
You got to call me and ask me. It's about 2:30. I'm down here on Pacific Avenue on April 4th. I'm talking with
Avi.
Avi, you are from Mountain View?
Yes. Yes, I am from Mountain View.
Mountain View has said no, no, no to the RVs?
Yes, they did.
What's that all about?
I actually don't know too much about it, but I'm absolutely radically against it. I think everybody needs a place to stay, no matter what. I think what the Bay Area is doing to the homeless population in general is unspeakable, and something needs to be done, and these wonderful people in Santa Cruz are doing something about it, or trying to, anyway.
We clap our gums a lot down
Yes,
here.
We do. All of us do. We got more people here. Don't have much else to say. I'm not much of a radio talk show personality.
You're doing fine.
Yeah.
So you're with Food Not Bombs.
Yeah. I volunteer with Food Not Bombs and actually made a zine for working in unhoused spaces. I've been working in unhoused spaces.
This is not a distribution point, but this is for people who are walking by. Oh, well, then go ahead with what you're doing. I mean, you know, this is, we're trying to stop. No, but I appreciate the thought. I've gotten so many of those, and it's pushing me out of house and home.
Yeah. Robert, we have to get going to Food Not Bombs, but thank you so much for your time.
We've been talking with
Avi.
Hi, Marina. Nice to meet you.
Take care of her. Make sure she doesn't get out of line.
Hey, we'll message you. I'll call you.
Call me up. Nate is down here giving out little paper cranes, as this is one. He has a downtown street scene. Hang on, Nate. Tell me before you go, how is the crane business?
Doing good.
I know you have been in the past running for shitty council. Are you still working on that?
I've got enough people asking me to run again. I'm taking it a little serious. Not too serious, though.
What's your housing situation?
unlike a lot of people around these parts, I do have a roof.
How are police treating you and those you know?
Respectfully.
Thank you, Nate.
I'll see, I got rid of the majority of papers that were in the box. January. You know why there were so many January papers?
Because
I wasn't...
Say again.
So here we are talking with an old-timer. Nick, what's your name, old-timer?
Daniel McCree.
Daniel, when were you here before and why did you leave?
Oh, I just went to Boulder Creek.
We're stuck out of town, but grab a flyer if you want.
Yeah, no, it's a lot different down here running from the cops for weed, man.
What else do you remember from... When were you here last? Spending time...
98, 99.
What are your memories of then?
Oh, just the wanting to stay away from the bullies, which is the cops, you know?
And has that changed now? Are you feeling safer in Santa Cruz from respect to police?
COVID, especially COVID, they showed that there weren't really... There was no crimes. I mean... Like, what were they doing the whole COVID time, you know? It just showed...
They were doing sneaky crimes that the police couldn't enforce. Sleeping illegally, for one thing.
Now, I mean, yeah. Might as well just tell everyone to go stay up all night or something. I don't know. That's pretty gnarly.
But you know how it is. The meth solution.
Yeah. Well, I'm very blessed to be left alone by them, that's for sure.
You have a guitar with you. Are you playing on them all?
Sometimes.
Do you have anything you've written yourself? Or?
No, not really.
Any tunes you like to play?
Oh, quite a few of them, actually.
Do you want to sit here and entertain us? Or are you?
Yeah, I think so.
If you feel like it. And again, we've been talking with...
Daniel McCree.
Any other thoughts, Daniel, about things that have happened to you recently you think would be of interest to folks?
Oh, I heard that Andy Mills, the police chief, on the radio on the one at UCSC's radio station. That's actually pretty enlightening, like, that he's actually not quite, like, he's actually looking at the big picture, you know, the bigger picture of, like, what to do, I think.
What did he say that struck you?
Oh, just the fact that, like, that he was actually looking at the fact that mental health and substance abuse and just situations, like, it's not just one little, like, salute, one little answer for everyone. It's more like the dynamic of it is, I don't know, as far as I know, I think them is us. Them is us is my favorite quote I made up. Because, I mean, them is us. Now it's up to us to correct them. Crazy, huh?
Well, that's interesting. Mills has introduced the most as a repressive camping law that the city council is passing. So I tend to notice he talks a nice game, but when it comes to what he does in terms of, you know, actually laws he proposes and things like that, not so much. So, but, I mean, you know... nice talk is good.
There's a reasonability balance. The balance of reasonability is what we need to figure out. Like, I mean, I'm sure there's ways to make a warm, dry box that excludes moisture. That's all I want, you know? A warm, dry, breathing area.
You want a kitty box, so to speak.
Whatever, yeah. As long as it's warm and dry in the winter. I mean, that's... it's all about the water. You got the water coming down, the water evaporating from the ground, like that's what gets our tents wet, and then you have the runoff from the land, but then you have our breathing air, which as long as we have a heat source to push it out of our box, then we have indoors. And that's technology that humans have up to date, I think.
I'm not aware that Andy has proposed any such thing or that he's interested in setting up housing for homeless people anywhere.
I don't think Andy Mills is interested in that. I do see his perspective, though. Like, I could see where it's like... I could see that, like, the unreasonable people, the people that are being unreasonable on both sides, like, need to stop being unreasonable. Like...
Well, you know what?
But we made a lot of people that don't care anymore. That's what it... I mean, can't make somebody care again. Like, there's a lot of people that they took the care away from. Like, they just don't care anymore. And it's...
Well, I think people who are concerned very narrowly about their property and the wealth that they've acquired here, the status in Santa Cruz, the you know, the real estate by the ocean, it may establish a frame of mind that makes people less prone to give a shit about other people or be very focused more on their own situation. It's, of course, a generalization, and I'm sure it's not really entirely true.
If I owned a house on West Cliff, I'd allow people to camp in the front yard. I mean, as long as they're not trashing it, you know what I mean? Like, that's the balance I would find.
Well, your neighbors wouldn't let you stay there for long, mister.
Well, we just have to...
Santa Cruz, we're not talking about Tijuana, buddy.
Yeah, well, it's all fluid, man. Everyone's capable of doing good.
Well, any other memories of the past you wish to mention that you remember from the past? Come back here. That do you have any memories about how things were when you were in town before?
Oh yeah, I remember when we went to the city council meeting for Camp Paradise, and we sang what is that? It was everybody stand up, Nick. We all stood up at the city council meeting when that song was on.
I don't remember it, but I believe it.
Yeah, no, accountability and transparency are all... We know that it's going to work out. Accountability and transparency, as long as we have those, as long as we're willing to say it all in front of, like, everybody, that's the thing. And
if you ever get that from the government, I want you to come back and tell me about it.
Well, that's to make them like that. That's like where you have to raise them like a kid. And the whole brutality, especially towards Josh Ney, I mean, that's pretty gnarly.
Tell me about that.
Oh, they just have it out for him. He might have a mouth on him, but that doesn't give them any right or excuse to cause him physical harm and take away his medical rights and his... I mean, it's a blessing that he survived all the stuff he's been through.
About what has happened to Josh. I mean, I've heard some stories about that, but
I don't know what the situation style they started, but like once there's like right behind this place right here, they beat him up real bad, and then he had a seizure, and they didn't give him seizure medication, and I mean, yeah, you're familiar with James Ney, right?
I do know James, and I do know Josh.
Yeah.
And I have heard that he and Eric were treated badly, but I didn't have... Were you the witness to any of this, or just got stories?
Yeah, I witnessed Dad getting the phone call on the other end of the, you know? I witnessed what Dad's reaction was, and it's not okay to do that anymore.
What's your father's name?
No, James. I witnessed James's reaction to getting that phone call.
How is James doing these days?
He's okay. He's doing okay. He's as loud as ever.
James, I think he's lost two houses now in fires.
Yeah, we got burnt. They lit the backfire from him from 100 Brook Lane up down in Bowler Creek. They started the backfire there to burn up the hill, but I think it saved most of 236, like that little stretch between Boulder Creek and the Camp Creme. I think it saved it. So I mean, like all the stuff I lost there, I was okay to hear that it was freaking 236 was saved. I have a few friends that live on that road, and I don't know. I lost all my tools and stuff, but I still have my music.
Did James give the permission to burn his house, or did they just do it?
No. They evacuated us, and they did not get permission from us, no.
Is James getting any compensation for the damaged property?
Not even a little bit. Yep. But
for those who don't know, James was an old-time civil rights fighter here in Santa Cruz for the rights of homeless people back in, around the time of Camp Paradise, actually, in 2001, thereabouts. What's he been doing lately, do you know?
He's living up in Boulder Creek. Yep, he's, I don't know, I'll try to get him down here, though. We'll have him come down and talk to you.
Get out of it. Come out of his kennel, for heaven's sake.
Yep. Yeah, no, he's a social butterfly once he gets out there, you know. But as far as I know, like, he's a good dude. Like, I was living up there with him for, like, 5 years up at Camp Graham. So, I got to know him pretty well. He's like a co-dad, you know.
Yeah. For you.
Huh?
Co-dad for you.
Yeah. Yep.
Again, we've been talking with
Daniel McCrae.
Third time's a charm, Daniel. Thank you, man.
Hey, y'all take care.
All right.
And there's more to the tent tabling downtown, but I am running out of time, and frankly, it's not as interesting as I'd hoped, although I think I'll play a bit more of the choicest cuts, if there are any choicest cuts, on Sunday, when and if we continue this situation here in the net. So let's end up with some more songs by Daryl Cherney that I don't think I've ever played them before, so you might enjoy them. They're, again, these are from the album They Sure Don't Make Hippies Like They Used To. And in the meantime, consider joining us at this tent tabling if you are opposed to laws that make criminals out of people whose only option is to sleep outside. It's the policy in Santa Cruz, and it's going to get worse. And the chances are that voices raised can ultimately have an impact. At least that's been my belief for decades, and I think it probably has had some impact, though I'm not really sure how much, where, and to what extent. But I do it anyway.
Serious, the system doesn't work, and every politician I've known's turned out to be a jerk. She said the Democratic Club is not the way to make a change, and you know this run for Congress, boy, it's a got you acting strange. And she said, I think you're running away from the issues that we face. The work at hand cannot be done from such a lonely, distant place. In Washington, they'll chew you up, then they'll spit you out for dead. Well, I looked at her and said, I know you're right, but I've got to move ahead. 'Cause I'm running for the children to offer them a choice. Run for the wilderness that cannot raise its voice. And I'm running for the homeless whose days are filled with strife. I'm a running for our planet. I'm a running for my life. So I said to her, just look on up. You know that sunny sky has got a hole in the ozone layer, and everyone could fry. Can you taste the water now? Say you could die of thirst. And they're fighting wars just like before, and it's only getting worse. But she said, your words are radical, and they'll only cut you down. The District of Columbia, oh, it's a mighty wicked town. But I said to her, those congressmen, well, they need to hear what's wrong. I want to give them a thrill up on Capitol Hill, and I want them to sing along. 'Cause I'm running for the children to offer them a choice. Running for the wilderness that cannot raise its voice. And I'm running for the homeless whose days are filled with strife. I'm a running for our planet. I'm a running for. cannot raise its voice. And I'm running for the homeless whose days are filled with strife. I'm a running for our planet Earth. I'm a running for my life.
And that was Daryl Cherney for Congress, Running for My Life, a musical platform. Don't know what happened in his election campaign. I guess it was, might have been 1988, 1990, don't know. But I like his songs. Back at you again on Sunday. If you got questions or comments or news, give me a call, 831-423-4833. And I will, if I don't answer you immediately, I will get back to you. If you have an interest in listening to back shows, they can be found on the Huff website at huffsantacruz.org under Lost and Latest Shows. I'll be talking to you again if you're listening.
Strong, but you needed proof. You saw her bathing on the roof. Her beauty and the moonlight overthrew you. And she tied you to her kitchen chair. And she broke your throne and she cut your hair. And from your lips she drew. Hallelujah. Hallelujah. there was a time what's really going on below, but now you never show that to me, do you? But remember when I moved in you, and the holy dove was moving too, and every breath we drew is hallelujah. Oh,
I wish I was a little bit taller. I wish I was a baller. I wish I had a girl who looked good, I would call her. Wish I had a rabbit in a hat with a bat and a 6-4 ball. I wish I was a little bit taller. I wish I was a baller. I wish I had a girl who looked good, I would call her. Wish I had a rabbit in a hat with a bat and a 6-4 ball. I wish I was a baller. I wish I had a girl who was good. I would call her. Wish I had a rabbit in a hat and a bat and a 6-4 baller. I wish I was a little bit taller. I wish I was a baller. I wish I had a girl who was good. I would call her. Wish I had a rabbit in a hat and a bat and a 6-4 baller. I wish I was like 6'9", so I can get with Yoshi, cause she don't know me, but Yoshi's pretty fine. You know I see her all the time, everywhere I go, even in my dreams, I got scheme of ways to make her mine. Cause I know she's living back, her boyfriend's tall, and he plays ball, so how am I gonna compete with that? Cause when it comes to playing basketball, I'm always last to be decent, in some cases never beat at all. So I just lean up on the wall, or sit up in the bleachers with the rest of the girls who came to watch they may have ball. Tag y'all, I never understood black, while the jocks get the fly girls, and me, I get the hood rats. I tell them scat, skittles, kabobble, got hit with a bottle, put in the hospital for talking that mess. I confess it's a shame when you living in a city that's the size of a box and nobody knows your name. Glad I came to my senses, like quick got sick to my stomach, overcome it by thought of me and her together, right? So when I asked out, she said I wasn't a type. I wish I was a little bit taller, I wish I was a baller, I wish I had a girl who looked good, I would call her. Wish I had a rabbit in a hat with a bat and a 6-4 baller. I wish I was a little bit taller, I wish I was a baller. Hey.
Zone. These are the targets for you to drop bombs on. AOL, Time Warner, Cisco Systems, Mindspring.com, Amazon.com, MSNBC, eBay.com, DoubleClick.net, 24/7 Media, Dell Computer, Hewlett Packard, Qualcomm, IBM, QS, Yahoo, Microsoft, MSN, Verizon, AT&T, WorldNet. And may I repeat your mission? Bomb all of these targets and destroy them. Bomb all of these and destroy them. Over.
Bacardi, like it's your birthday, and you know we don't give up, cause that's your birthday. You'll find me in the club, bottle full of bub. My mind got what you need if you need to fill a buzz. I'm in the having sex, I ain't in the making love, so come give me a hug if you're in the getting rough. You can find me in the club, bottle full of bub. My mind got what you need if you need to fill a buzz. I'm in the having sex, I ain't in the making love, so come give me a hug if you're in the getting rough. When I pull up out front, you see the Benz on dip. When I roll 20 deep, so it's drama in the club. Yeah. Now that I roll with Dre, everybody show me love. When you sell like them and them, you get plenty of groupie love. Look, homie, ain't nothing changed. Rolls down, G's up. The exhibit in the cutting, man, rolling trees up. If you watch how I move, you mistake before I play up. Been hit with a few shells, but I don't walk with a limp. I'm all right. In the hood, in L.A., they saying 50, you hot. They like me, I want them to love me like they love pop. But holla in New York with a shell, they tell you I'm loco. Yeah. And the plan is to put the rap game in the choke.
This announcement from the producers of this record contains important information for radio program directors and is not for broadcast. The first cut on this record has been cross-format focused for airplay success. As you well know, a record must break on radio in order to actually provide a living for the artists involved. Up until now, you've had to make these record-breaking decisions on your own, relying only on perplexing intangibilities like taste and intuition. But now, there's a better way. The cut that follows is the product of newly developed compositional techniques based on state-of-the-art marketing analysis technology. This cut has been analytically designed to break on radio, and it will, sooner or later. For the station that breaks it first, the benefits are obvious. You lead the pack. Yes, no matter what share of this crazy market you do business in, no other release is going to satisfy your corporation's current idea of good radio like this one. On this cut, we're working together, on the same wavelength in scientific harmony. But remember, this cut is constructed for multi-market breaking now. Don't waste valuable research with needless delay. We've done the hard work of ensuring your success. The final step is up to you. Special designer song follows in 5, 4, 3, 2, 1.
Get around.